That's a good start. So people can be more or less open. And in order for us to perceive essence, we need openness. When we don't perceive essence, it's not so much because essence isn't there, because we're not there. Essence is always here. It needs our openness to be able to perceive it. And also, there is no hurry. It's not that you have to open yourself as soon as possible. Every soul, every person has their own timing of relaxation, of opening. There's no need to push yourself. Actually, pushing yourself is a way to close the door. So the ways of essence are mysterious in the sense that you cannot do it. In our ego self, we cannot decide to do something that moves us to essence. It just needs an opening. It's more a letting go than any doing. And it takes time. It takes time to relax. It takes time to trust. It takes time to be courageous to open. You see the movement of the trees behind me? Sylvia and Laya and Keo and Emma and I planted those trees more than 20 years ago when we were students. Just to give you an idea of, you can relax. Things take time. Trees grow, people open. And we talked in our first talk about that probably each one of you has a longing to explore more. Like some of us have this feeling, is this all there is? Especially when you're living in a closed space, you start to feel alone. You start to think, is this my life? Is this all there is? And in everybody it's different, but there grows a longing to know more. Not to know more intellectually, but to know more experientially. And that needs an openness. It needs an openness to being. And everybody has this longing, otherwise you would not be here. Everybody has this flame. Some people have a burning flame, and some people have a little flame, but there is a, in everybody there is a longing for truth, a longing to end suffering, any kind of longing that makes you willing to take the risk to be open. In our second talk, we talked about presence, about this most important work we do is to be present, because presence has this openness. Presence has this quality that supports us to be open to anything, to any experience, because that's actually what presence does. Presence is tremendously open. It has space for anything, everything. And one way to describe the diamond approach in a very short way, in a bumper sticker method, is called inclusive transcendence. Inclusive transcendence, meaning we transcend where we are now by totally accepting what we experience And by totally accepting what we experience, we transcend where we were. And we include that, and then we transcend that. So the transcendence that we're interested in is not a transcendence that excludes. Not like, not this, not that, but that. Well, of course, we've had religions that tried that. Say, no, not sexuality, not anger, not this, not that, not that, that. And the diamond approach is a method that uses inclusive transcendence by seeing that true freedom comes from including. So also is a very good word in our work. I feel this, this also. Rage also. Fear also. Resistance also. Love also. And by saying, keep saying also, not just mentally, but in your soul, saying also, this also, and being curious, like our last talk this morning, being curious and, okay, so really exploring it and feeling it. By being inclusive, we reach to greater spaces of freedom. And the freedom doesn't come from not feeling those difficult things anymore, but the freedom comes from also. Yes, I'm willing to feel that also, and that also. One way to say what essence is essence is tremendous big also. It has space for everything. So if you're interested in essence, get into the habit of also. Emma talked about openness and allowing as qualities of presence, as a way or a simply method to move back to the innocence that we're born into. Every child is open. And then as part of our human development, we, in response to our early environment, we form an ego structure. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of how we develop as human beings. We form an ego structure, and that ego structure kind of forms us and also closes some parts of us. It's more, could say the ego structure is based on protection, defenses, keeping yourself together, control, tension. And it's the way we see it, it's a bit like a cocoon. It's a cocoon in which you can grow. But it's not an end phase. The ego structure is just a necessary phase in human development. And at some point, you get enough of building ego structure, and you start to long for openness, and you start to long for the qualities that are out there. So in the four talks we did so far, we've been focusing on those qualities, the flame, the longing, the openness, the allowing, the curiosity, the presence. And so far we haven't paid much attention to the counterforces. So we want to do that also. We also want to look at what are the counterforces to opening. Yeah? And we don't want to be curious about the counterforces only to remove them, but we want to be curious about them because we want to also bring them into the light. And one thing that you already might have found out about the ego structure, everything you try to get rid of gets more rigid. I don't know if you found out about that already. Everything you try to get rid of gets more rigid, yeah? So that's good to know. That's really important information. Yeah? That can save you a lot of time. Yeah, it can save you a lot of therapy. It can save you a lot of troubles, save you a lot of money. Really, everything you try to get rid of rigidifies in your soul. So the way we explore our own structure and our ego structure is with openness, curiosity, and really wanting to know, bringing it into the light. There is not an attitude behind it of wanting to remove it. There's not an attitude of wanting to get rid of it. And there is an understanding and an experience that by bringing ego structure that normally lives mostly, for the most part, in our unconscious, in the dark, by bringing it into the light, it has this capacity of getting more transparent to the light. Our essential nature starts to shine through. And although you might know that, that's also not, you can, ego is very clever. Say, aha, got that. I'm going to make my ego structure more transparent. Yeah, so we all have this inner project manager, and everything you hear in and read in spiritual books, that project manager makes into a project. But we are not a project. Yeah, so it is more mysterious than that. It's not like, oh, I am going to do this. I'm just sharing this with you so that you get a sense of the inner attitude that we have that actually is most pragmatic. But I feel myself, I'm very practical. I like what works. So I try to inform you about what works. And I know that maybe some of you will hear it, or at some point. This, in my own journey, I heard many things that I only understood about 10 years later or so. But still, it is helpful to get some information about how things work. And then really seeing and exploring them and trying them out. Okay, so we want to have a better look, not so much at all the opening and the presence and the curiosity and the allowing and all that, but we want to have a look at our structure and understand the structure. So let me ask you, what... And we don't need a microphone. You can just raise your hand. What would you say are the most effective ways to stay closed? Raise your hand. What's an effective way to stay closed?
Walls.
Being right. Being right. You're right.
Feeling superior.
To know everything is a good way to stay closed.
Lack of trust
or fear, Anders?
Rejecting your experience.
Rejecting your experience, very effective.
Spiritual concepts.
Yeah, spiritual concepts. Blaming, very good. It's a good way to keep your ego structure intact. Stress? Strategies, yeah, either worldly strategies or spiritual strategies. I want to get from A to B instead of B and A. Yeah, okay, Achim. Be a critic of someone else closes us off also. Very effective. Being proud, pride. Yeah, pride also has a sense of closing us off. Okay. You're very creative.
Judging and making assumptions.
Complaining. Yeah, some people are professionals in that.
Television,
distraction. Distraction is also a way that we are... not really present here, but we're always over there. Okay.
Living in yesterday and living in tomorrow.
yesterday and tomorrow and skip the now. Okay. Be a victim. Be identified with the victim. It's also a way of staying stuck in some kind of identity. Have more? Yeah. Very good. Yeah. That gets a lot of points. Trying to be perfect. So that's a good thing to tag on to, is that true nature is not perfect. And when we become essential, we don't become perfect. We do become unique. We become human. And we make mistakes. That's part of being human. So our interest here is not perfection. It's being real. And if we're real as human beings, it includes imperfection. That too can save you a lot of time and money. Was one more here?
Being trying to be a teacher or a helper or advisor.
Thank you. But an important one, and I guess many of us here are in helping professions and in teaching professions. Yeah? And I can take it also personal. I've been for many times I was stuck without knowing it in an identity of being a helper. Yeah? And part of my gratification came from being a helper. So it really needed time for me to see through that identity of being a helper, which is also a certain rigidity. I'm happy you mention it. Okay, it's always nice if you guys do the talk. But now I have to get back to my thread. So those are all very good methods of keeping your structure intact. And we're all very creative in using them. That doesn't mean that they're wrong. It doesn't mean that you can decide to stop doing it. Many of these things are very habitual and repetitive, and they're rooted in our unconscious. So don't make a project, and you have, so many of you wrote down all the ideas that you can do to stay closed, and then put them on your fridge and say, I'm not going to do that anymore. Because you cannot do this by decision. It does need a willingness to see them happen again and again. Yeah, bringing them into the light. So our freedom depends on essence. It doesn't depend on our own little self. That's also good to know. The more we are open to essence, the more of our ego structure gets into the light and starts to have less and less power. But trying to remove your ego structure or make it transparent is like trying to lift yourself by your shoelaces. It's a lot of effort and nothing happens. That too can save you a lot of time. So this afternoon we're going to look at a specific activity that is part of our ego structure that many of you already pointed to, which is the activity of attacking ourselves, which is one of the main supports of our ego structure. And traditionally, when Sigmund Freud talked about the formation of the ego structure and the different parts that he identified. He talked about three parts in the ego structure. And, it,
the ego and the superego. Es, ich und über ich. And it, you could say, is the animal part in us that's wild and full of energy and has all these instinctual drives like aggression and sexuality and survival, and all those very alive energies are in that. It's like the animal or the wild child in us. It's unrefined and it has a lot of energy and it wants. And if you tap into it and feel it, it doesn't have much patience either. It wants what it wants, and it wants it now. And then we all get born with that, and then we start to develop an ego structure. And the ego structure is more like, you could say, it's not I want what I want, but let's make a plan how to get it. Let's make a plan. Let's make a strategy. Or you look at your environment and you start to respond to your environment and you start to see, oh, I have to be like this in order to get what I want. And this understanding, it's actually a very intelligent process, this understanding like, oh, in this family I have to be like this in order to get what I want. And that's actually how our ego structure gets formed. Or I have to be like this not to get hurt. Or I have to be like this in order to be loved. Or I have to be like this in order to not get punished. Yeah. So that forms our ego structure, and that comes on top of this animal, free, wild energy. And then on top, and that's why it's called super. Super doesn't mean better, but higher. Above that is kind of an inner policeman, which is called the superego, or über ich, or inner critic, or inner judge. And the function of that superego, inner judge, inner critic, is to make sure that nothing happens in our behavior, in our ego structure, that is out of the bandwidth of what is allowed, what you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to behave in any social situation. What is the superego is a lot of knowledge about what is right and what is wrong and what you're supposed to wear and what you're supposed to say. And if you start to open and you start to do things that are outside of the bandwidth of your ego structure, the superego comes in and says, not that. And it uses sometimes very subtle ways to correct you, but often not so subtle ways. It simply attacks you. Yeah. Who do you think you are to sit in front of people and tell them something? Yeah. So it can manifest in a range from a mildly corrective voice that guides us and informs us about what is right to do in a certain situation, to, on the other side of the range, a vicious attacking voice that really makes us shrink and be pulled back in fear and takes away all our life and all our juice. So this afternoon we're going to look at that voice, and not to remove it, but to understand it and to bring awareness to it. Because the superego works best in the dark, in our unconscious. It often is there unconscious. Yeah, we're not aware of it. I'm reminded now of it's an American children's movie. Maybe some of you know it. It's called The Wizard of Oz. You know that or ever heard of it? The Wizard of Oz. And There is four friends who are on an adventure, and they come at the big castle, and then in the castle there is this thundering voice, and there is this immense big face that is projected on a wall. Thundering voice, big face, and it's very impressive, and it's kind of the voice is very dominating also. So these four friends, they start to shiver, and they also have a little dog with them, and so they're very afraid of that voice. And then suddenly the dog goes to the curtain, and he pulls the curtain aside, and there's a very little guy with a microphone and a projector behind the curtain. And he's speaking as if he is this big Wizard of Oz that's projected the big face on the wall and a thundering voice that is amplified. And the dog exposes that there is actually just a very little guy behind, and he pretends to be the Wizard of Oz. So our superego has power over us because we believe it, and because it lives in our unconscious. So today I am the dog. I'm taking away the curtain and showing you that actually our superego doesn't even have a body. It's just hot air. It's only a voice. Nothing behind the curtain. The only energy it has is your energy. So either the energy is in you, or it is in this voice. But it's really important to be aware of this voice. Again, nothing wrong with the superego, nothing wrong with the inner critic. It really has a function. It helps us to be appropriate. Every culture has a different superego, because every culture has different attitudes, has different ways of, like, when you go to India, you have to dress different as a woman. It's totally okay to show your belly, but not your shoulders. So if you go to India with a German superego, you get in trouble because you show your shoulders. No, you need to adapt your superego and say, no shoulders. Belly is okay, but no shoulders. So every culture, every family has their own specific superego. Every person has their own specific superego that is informed by your history. It's informed by your parents. A lot of the superego, books, the superego is also called an internalized parent. So you kind of, instead of the parent from the outside that tells you what is right and what is wrong, the child learns from the parent, and he or she takes that voice inside, and then it becomes a voice in your head that tells you what is right and wrong. It's very helpful, because that's how we learn. That's how we learn how to function in the world. But as I said, that function of the superego is appropriate, it's phase appropriate. At some time, as we start to grow and we do function in the world, all of you function in the world, more or less. Was that superego? All of us function in the world, more or less, but at some point this superego is not a support anymore, but starts to become a hindrance, especially if you're interested in spiritual growth, because spiritual growth needs openness. And you might have noticed it already, and that's why we're talking about it today. When you're interested in openness, you start to open, and you get very personal with people, your heart starts to be loving, you feel intimate, you're willing to expose yourself. Often on those moments when you open more than you're used to, superego comes in. Yeah? That's why we're informing you about it. Yeah? Like when you're speaking out in front of a group of people, it can come up. it can come up when you do something, like normally you're very timid, and then suddenly you find yourself dancing very freely, and you're really enjoying it, and then suddenly you find yourself looking at yourself from the outside, and the superego comes in. Look at you. Look at you. And you freeze up, and the whole dance disappears. Yeah. So this inner critic tries to restore your familiar cramp. It starts to restore your familiar sense of self. That's its job description. The job description of the superego is keep the ego structure intact. That's what it does. That's what it got hired for, and it keeps doing it. It keeps doing it. Nobody told it, thank you, I'm fine now. Yeah. So when you are interested in spiritual growth, at some point we need to see this, to see how big the effect of it is, and we need to find a way to disengage from it. Because nobody wants to open when you're under attack. Why would you? When you're under attack, you protect yourself, you contract. Makes sense. You don't want to open when you're being attacked. Imagine that you would have somebody next to you all day, and their only task, and you would pay them for it, their only task was to be effectively criticize you all day. Say, look at your hair. Your hair. You have a bad hair day. Do something about it. Yeah, or you're talking to people, say, that was not very intelligent, what you just said. Yeah, or the superego actually manifests in three ways. One way it manifests is it attacks you. It attacks your experience. You're not supposed to feel that. Who do you think you are? It attacks your body. It's something that's directed at yourself. Second way the superego manifests is in attacking other people. The third way the superego manifests is in projected out superego. You imagine everybody else has judgments about you. Those are the three ways it manifests. They're all three effective in keeping you closed. So one, the first one is towards yourself, the second one is to other people, and the third one is that you imagine other people are judging you, which makes you afraid, makes you not want to open up. All you guys, you look very judgmental to me. I'm not going to talk anymore here. Yeah, I'm not going to show myself, I'm not going to open, I'm not going to be real with you, I'm going to protect myself. There is a text of Hamid Almas that I found very helpful, and I'm going to use that text to teach a little bit more about the superego. One of the most personally devastating mental activities is that of attacking oneself. For most people, this is largely unconscious. Those awakening to its existence feel it as tremendously painful, powerful, and omnipresent. It robs us of our vitality. It robs us of our expansiveness, because it contracts you. It contracts you back into the familiar self. It robs us of confidence and inner peace, makes you afraid. Attacking oneself is a major source of self-betrayal and sabotage. Attacking others is an important cause of separation and alienation. in relationships, attacking and being attacked creates an atmosphere that destroys intimacy. It destroys mutual support, causing distrust and defensiveness. Maybe you've also had experience from that. If you, in a relationship, find yourself in a fight, often the fight has something to do with blaming. I feel this because of you did that. And you're wrong because you did that. So attacking closes us off. And when we close off, we lose intimacy. We lose intimacy with ourselves, and we lose intimacy with the other. Yeah. It's a big cause of the loss of intimacy in relationship. At work, it creates an environment filled with verbal put-downs and non-productive competitive behavior. Yeah. Maybe some of you have known workplaces like that, where there's not mutual support, but there is this poking of each other or competitive behavior where you try to be better than the other or put the other one down. That creates a whole atmosphere, a whole work atmosphere is very counterproductive. Anger and recrimination expressed subtly acted out become the norm. Sometimes in workplaces, the anger or the attacks come out in what people call humor. But it's not really humor. It's like a stab underwater. Yeah, you kind of make fun of each other at the expense of the other. That too is superego. Yeah, but it's often camouflaged as funny. But it's not funny at all. It's painful. Yeah, that too closes us off. Nervous tension and physical distress often result from prolonged exposure. This kind of atmosphere, if we find ourselves in an atmosphere like that, I'm sure is the cause of a lot of psychosomatic disease. Yeah? If you're being under attack, that really affects your body. Okay. More on the physical body. Our physical body and appearance become a constant target for a never-ending barrage of demeaning comments that leave oneself ugly and unattractive. Yeah. So this is something that is really, I started as a body worker. I worked a lot with bodies. For me, this specific attack where we attack our own bodies, no matter how your body looks, is such a painful thing. It's such a painful thing that keeps us contracted. At some point I worked in a hospital with boys that had a progressive muscle disease, and they were spastic and they couldn't move much, and they didn't get much older than 15 or 16 years old. And some of those guys, I learned so much of those boys. I really feel my heart is responding now as I talk about it, because I worked with them for a couple of years before they died. But some of them, although they had such a crooked body that was so spastic and unable to move, they were so loving with these bodies. It was amazing. And at the same time, in my hometown, I also worked with the dancers in the ballet academy. And some of those girls had one of those kind of perfect bodies and perfect, like those magazine kind of manifestations. And I learned so much of working with both those people, because sometimes it's not all of them. It's a bit black and white the way I tell it now. It wasn't like that. But sometimes one of those girls would have a pimple. And that ruined the whole week. Because she attacked herself so much for not being perfect. And the effect it had on the soul was one of contraction and really a lot of suffering, actually. And for me to go back and forth between the boys who were so contracted and spastic, and then going to the dancers who sometimes were so cruel with themselves. Not all of them. There were also people that were very loving with their bodies. It's a bit black and white the way you say it now. But I started to realize that being loving with your body as it is, that is such a support. It really doesn't matter how your body looks. It matters much more how you see it, how loving you are with it. This, you're going to have this body until you die. This is it. This is the body. Well, why not love it? It's really a good thing to realize, like how important that is, how much effect it has when you attack your body. Okay, that was my little body rant. Okay, then we get to the work we do here. Personal growth work can be greatly hindered by the unchecked negative judgments of the attacking inner voice. Vulnerability and openness to one's emerging inner experience cannot be sustained in the face of such a frightening and dangerous force. So that's where why we talk about it here. So we do a lot of things that support you. Right? The whole environment here is created to support you, to invite you to open up. But if you open up, and at the same time when you open, this inner voice comes in and judges you, that's going to contract you back. That's going to make you afraid. That's going to make you not wanting to be honest and open to people. So that's why we talk about it. That's why we mention it, not because we think you can stop it, but because we want to inform you to be aware of it. And we're going to talk also about, we're going to talk three times about this in different ways. We're going to also talk about how can you actually disengage from this, which is the next question, of course. Like, okay, I'm aware. Who in here is aware that they have a superego? Look around. Also look to the back. Now suddenly they raise their hands. So we all have a superego. Yeah? And the superego can be more or less aware of it. And the more you're aware of it, the easier it is to disengage from it. Yeah? And disengage is not the same as reject. You cannot reject it. If you reject it, remember what happens? Get stronger. We're not interested in rejecting it. We're interested in bringing it into the light so that we can see that it's just hot air. And its force will get less. And it needs to get less if we're interested in essence. If you're interested in being real, if you're interested in being true, you do need the freedom. You do need the freedom that comes from having no superego, no superego activity. Yeah? When you're under attack, you're not going to feel free. So it's really important that this mental activity, it's just mental activity, it's a voice in your head, gets exposed, because the more it gets exposed, the easier it is to see how painful it is, and the easier it is to disengage from it. Let me get my notes. Then a little bit more on the effects. What is the effect of a superego attack? Let's hear your wisdom again. Raise your hand if you're aware of what the effect is of a superego attack. Contraction. Being ashamed, right? Embarrassed and disengaging from contact.
hide. Guilt. Yeah, that's an important, I'm happy you mentioned that. Guilt often has an attack in it. Yeah. So it's good when you feel guilty to see if it was preceded by a superego attack, yeah, making you wrong. Okay, what else? Pain. Yes, it's very painful to be under attack. Makes you feel insecure. You start, some people think to attack back or to also attack. At least when you are attacking, you don't lose your power. Like if you attack me, I also attack. Right. Sorry? Stagnation. Yeah. It kind of stagnates you. You freeze. Yeah. So freezing, numbness. Superego can really make you numb. You don't feel anything anymore. You're kind of in shock. What else? So, yeah. Superego. Thank you. Superego regresses you. It talks to you as if you're still 6 years old. Yeah? The superego is an inner parent. It's an internalized parental voice that treats you as a child. Yeah? So often there is an inner identification with a child, and then the superego voice attacks that. Yeah? Very painful. But often when there's an inner child, there's an inner parent. Yeah? And they communicate. Yeah? Good, I'm happy you mentioned that. What else? Resistance. Hopefully. Resistance, you don't want to be attacked. Failure, yeah. Superego is really good at making you feel like a failure. Like, oh, I never make it. No, you won't never make it. Yeah.
Disconnect from your being, your body, become very mental.
Exactly. Disconnect from your body, become very mental. Brahm? Right. Superego takes away your spontaneity. It takes away your aliveness. The more you get attacked, the more you lose your spontaneity, your aliveness, your energy. Yeah. Helpless, yeah. Right. It compresses you. Yeah. I just talked with the other teachers about, since Brahm mentioned the spontaneity and we talked about the aliveness and the fire, we had an idea. This is something we do in one of the other groups, is to have our last evening here a dance. So I think now I'm talking about the superego, it would be a nice idea to challenge the superego. And have a disc jockey here and have us have a possibility to move our bodies and to move with that energy and have a dance. So let's see what happens with that. Okay, so one thing that people didn't mention yet, which is very relevant, is that attacks of the superego often have create physical tension. Many people describe headaches, for example. Headaches is a big effect of superego. Pain in the neck. Often people describe it as a voice that's on your shoulder. Yeah? And often it creates a pain in this area, in your shoulder, left or right shoulder, neck, headaches, shrinking, pain in your stomach. So when you notice that, then sometimes you don't notice the attack, but you notice the effect of it. You suddenly start to feel very small and vulnerable and all that and painful and withheld. And they say, hey, what happened? And then you trace back there was a superego attack. Okay, so I think you get enough ideas to go on your own exploration with this. So, and again, the exploration we do is simply to bring it into the light. Don't attack yourself for having a superego. Yeah, if you do that, things get worse and worse. We simply want to bring it into the light, and it needs some sense of lightness with it. It's like we all have it, and we just want to expose it in a friendly way. So exercises again like this morning in a group of three. One question? Okay. Definitely. If you want to feel grandiose and superior, the best thing is to direct your superego at others. Like, everybody here is kind of inferior to me. Yeah, it's like, I'm a bit disappointed by your development. Yeah, I thought reading the applications that you would be further than this. That too is superego, and it creates superiority and inferiority there. Yeah, good point. Possibly. Yes. Yeah. The superego does all these courses also. Really? No, I mean it. I'm serious. The superego is always with you. So all the information you ever got, all the spiritual information you got, the superego uses that too. It's like, it can, for example, attack you, say like, you're not very meditative today, are you? Or you should meditate a little more. You're really like a loose cannon today. Or look at all these people. They're very present, and you're just eating too much. And like you, it uses anything. Sorry? You're paying for it. Exactly. Okay, good. So, our exercise. Each one of you gets 15 minutes with two very present, gentle, silent witnesses to explore how the superego show up in your life. How does it show up in your relationship, in your work, in your accomplishments? Maybe you've already got 3 PhDs and your superego is still after you for not being valuable. Superego can create a lot of ambition. It can create an imperium and lets you never relax. So you want to really be honest here. It's like, how does the superego show up in my life? Does it attack my body, my capacities, my value? Does it mostly come up in relationship or more around money or work? Or does it get into sexuality? Or where does it show up? How does it talk to you? What tone of voice does it have? What person, when you were young, is this inner parent, is this inner voice? It might be a few. It's mostly my father and my uncle. Or, well, my superego and my mother, it's very hard to distinguish them. Yeah, just let yourself find out what it is. And then you want to also name, how does it affect you? What kind of effect does it have on you? Yeah, and then how do you deal with it? Do you mostly try to ignore it? Or you suffer in silence for 20 years? Or how do you deal with it? You try to hide it for other people? And then after the 15 minutes, the two kind, silent witnesses have a chance to ask you questions. No advice, no attacks, no judgments, no psychic readings, none of that. Simply kind questions. You said your superego attacks you around value. What kind of effect does that have on your body?
What effect does it have on your relationship? Questions that help clarify, that bring things into the light. Especially with this, you get a sense of it. Huh? I'm bringing it very lightly, but it's very sensitive. It's very sensitive material. Be very kind with your questions. Support each other and come from a loving place when you ask the questions. Okay? Is the exercise clear? 15 and 5. So 15 minutes exploration and then 5 minutes for the others to ask questions. So we have 15 and 5, 15 and 5, 15 and 5, an hour altogether. Be back here in an hour. If you find yourself without partners, join a threesome. If you want to share something, raise your hand and the microphone will come to you.